fries. Wake up. Shake up your business.
Hello, it's Libby Gore here. Libby with an I, Gore with a double R. How we love serving up a little degustation of the Enterprise breakfast menu for you. And what is on the platter today, I hear you ask? Well, the whole concept of frenemies. Now, you might know this concept as someone you love to hate, that person who's still in your life that you adore on the one hand, but who just drives you batty on the other, who you may not think ultimately has your best intentions in mind as they smile and invite you over for a dinner party. You know the sort. Cultural commentator Firas Masu has some interesting perspectives on frenemies as well, especially as they work beyond the realm of the personal and manifest in the realm of global relationships. It's a funny thing, the word frenemy. It's when you have mixed feelings about someone or something, like you want to keep them in your life, but you don't really like them all at the same time. But a frenemy is a friend who's also your enemy. Someone you stay in a relationship with because it's too difficult not to have them in your world. They may be a family member, a mate who you're rivals with. If you're in business, it may be a colleague or a competitor who you need for success, but who you know deep down actually is trying to do you in. Or if you're a country, it's another country who you're dependent on to sell your stuff to, your meat, your dairy, your agriculture, or who may supply you with a whole heap of imports that make life better here, like fertilizer or aviation or other products. But you're stuck in this relationship. You need them, you love them, but you hate what they do. Like Taylor Swift and Kendall Jenner and anyone else they don't like.
It's not a secret that Kendall Jenner and Selena Gomez have never been the best of friends. But when it comes to choosing between Team Selena and Team Kendall, it was a no-brainer for Taylor Swift. So what exactly did Taylor say about Kendall? Has Kendall always been jealous of Selena? Ugh, the drama.
Yeah, but they all still hang out. But when it comes to countries, frenemies are a really big deal. It affects yours and my quality of life. Like, we want to play soccer with Qatar, but their human rights abuses appall us. Not only that, we literally buy over $260 million worth of fertilizer, literally shit, from Qatar, and we sell them our chilled meat. Our farmers need them. And then they want to fly more into Australia, which is great because more competition will push international prices down, making our flights out cheaper. But by doing so, we'll be giving more Australian money to a government-owned airline whose practices towards its people we don't agree with, taking our dosh out of this country. Qatar is our frenemy. So is China. Sometimes America is. In World War I, England definitely was, but we didn't know it. Right now, Russia is. So how do you balance what's good about a relationship with what's bad?
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Is this a way to really live your life? So now let's take the political and make it personal. Do you know Sandy Ray? You must. She's a great colleague of mine. She's a psychologist. She has extraordinary insight into the realms of human behaviour. I'm really glad that Sandy is here to talk about frenemies, and I think she's possibly pleased too.
I think it's one of those relationships that, you know, in the old days we'd call it, you know, we have this love-hate relationship with X, Y or Z, you know. So I think that's really where it's coming from. That, you know, and these are people that, you know, are supposed to be your friend, but they actually work against you. They're very manipulative. They weaponize information that you share with them. They're competitive. They're jealous. But for some reason, they're still in your lives. They still have a purpose in your life.
But Sandy, an enemy is also in your life. So why do we attach that friend to the enemy? What makes a frenemy special?
When it's an enemy, we know it's an enemy.
Yeah, and we don't need them.
Exactly. And we actively work against them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the difference with a frenemy, is that they're often quite subtle. It'll be things like, Libby, darling, you know I'm being honest. You know it's because I'm your friend. But that outfit really looks like crap on you. and it might have been the nicest outfit that you saved. So you sort of go, oh, this is my friend. Yeah, I can take honesty. Oh, maybe the black outfit was wrong. So there's this sort of, you know, a balance against that person of going, do I need them in my life? But they're being honest. I should be able to handle honesty. But in fact, this person is using all this information to weaponize against you because they're the people that have, you know, they're really quite nasty underneath. They use people. They're indifferent to your well-being. And they're very competitive and passive-aggressive.
Yeah. Sandy, okay, so there are gradients, obviously, gradations of these relationships. We can think of a friend and a best friend or an enemy and a worst enemy. Are there different kinds of frenemies?
Well, not different kinds, but there's three types of relationships. And one is the ambivalent one, where you get, you know, look, I like them sometimes. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. So you just sort of tolerate them. Another one is called an involuntary relationship, where they're a workmate. Oh, watch out for those ones, because you can't get out of them. Or they're part of a larger group of people. You sort of have your eye on them, and you know they're pretty bitchy, might be a word that we often use to those sort of people. But you just sort of go, oh, well, I want to be with a larger group of people. And then there's other ones who are called the long-term frenemy. And the long-term frenemy are the ones that we keep in our lives because of guilt. We don't want them to be on their own. They're really nice people underneath everything. Or fear of conflict. You know that if you attack them or you confront them with something, these are the people that are really going to chew your head off. Or people that you can't say no to. For some reason, you just are unable to say no to these people. So they're the sorts of people or sorts of relationships that we have as frenemies.
Mm. How do you feel about this for us, starting off the day with a reality check about our relationships? I mean,
I love it.
It's really interesting, though, because
well, you did ring me up before for us. You know that, don't you?
Yeah. I did.
It's so. Thanks so much. And guess what? He rang me about you yesterday as well.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's all coming out now.
Yeah. But it is actually interesting because you kind of tell yourself that everything has to be perfect and that something must be wrong if it's not. But I kind of feel more placated knowing that you wander through life knowing there are variations of
relationships.
Of relationship and that one shouldn't expect anything else. Like it's actually normal to have, you know, good friends in your life, but also people that you are ambivalent about just because they're either in your family, they're long user, so to speak, you know, they've been there for a long time, or you work with them or you deal with them on some sort of level. And it's funny to extrapolate that into political relationships as well.
Interestingly, and I'd love to hear your take, Sandy, on this. Sometimes an enemy is quite valuable as well because they tell you something that's straight up and honest. They're not really interested in your evolution necessarily, but they can be very straight up with you and they can point out that your frenemies are actually more harmful to you.
Well, you know, what do they say? That one of the best ways to get to know someone is bring them into your den. You know, keep your enemies close. But of course, the difference with an enemy is you're not really going to reveal the deep intrapersonal thoughts or feelings or things like that, are you?
No.
So with a friend, I mean, what's the characteristic of a friend? Loyalty, being able to share, non-judgmental. They're all the characteristics of a good friend. So when you combine the friend and the enemy, we're not going to expect loyalty. We're not going to be able to expect non-judgment. And, you know, Libby is absolutely right. You know, we do have frenemies, these sorts of variations of themes of friendships in our lives. But the question is, how much emotional abuse do you endure by having a particular frenemy? And I think that's the yardstick. If they are constantly undermining you, bringing you down, embarrassing you, using information against you with another person, a colleague or a worker or someone even in the family, then it's time to confront that frenemy.
Okay, so you and I are Australians. Australia too has friends, enemies and frenemies in international relations. One of our greatest frenemies is our constantly evolving relationship with China. Oh, we need them. We hate them. We love them. We need them. We hate them. We love them. We need them. We hate them. Do I need to go on?
Let's say China.
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 Indeed, yes. China and Australia's trading relationship is as important as it comes. But it's so complicated when you're constantly preparing to go to war with them. I'd have to say that China is our biggest frenemy. Would you, Faraz? Or will I get someone watching me for saying that?
I don't know if they're a frenemy or just an enemy that we're too scared and we have to tiptoe around. Frenemy. I don't know. All right, explain.
Annie Louie is a comedian and co-host of China Today on ABC TV. What do you reckon, enemy or frenemy?
Well, I think firstly it's important to split the country from the people, which is the purpose of China Tonight and the show, because when you say frenemy, I think it's still very negative, I think, to put it that way, because we're talking about people as well. So I think you can be definitely friends with the people, mm-hmm. the culture, but what we're talking about when we talk about frenemies is the two countries politically.
What a lovely way to start that conversation and to frame it. This implication of fear and threat that filters down to the people and the culture must be incredibly frustrating.
It is. I think as somebody, the diaspora around the world, and also seeing this play out, especially during COVID the last couple of years, and the fear we have not shed yet, and China got rid of its zero COVID policy just recently and has resumed travel. So this is going to be really interesting around people going back to China and whether Australians will have that as a holiday destination, because I was doing some Googling and for even Hong Kong, and one of the auto corrects was, is Hong Kong safe to travel? So people are still uncertain about whether or not they should go and enjoy themselves in this country, because they're not sure if it's safe. And I'm sure the political unrest from the last few years in Hong Kong definitely plays on people's minds.
But great point, Annie, about the sort of having to separate from the society and the culture of a place. But when it comes to our roles as geopolitical players, is there a rivalry here between Australia and China, or is there a kind of a creative, collaborative competitiveness? How would you sort of describe this?
Yeah, who's Collingwood, Ooh. Who's Carlton?
When you say rivalry, I almost think there is no rivalry, because China is so big economically, and they can crush us with these tariffs and things that are affecting us if they wanted to. So I think in a way, China is not as concerned about what we do, because they do see us as that yappy little dog who's always like annoying them. So I think, the trading bans, there's no doubt that China is more capable with trading with other countries than us. So they're building networks in Africa, they're building networks in the Pacific. So I think Australia has a lot to suck up to China for. So I think that's playing out now in terms of the visit that's been confirmed, the first visit by the PM to China in 7 years, and it's definitely trying to reflect that 50th anniversary of Gough Whitlam's historic visit, and the parallels there and how things haven't changed very much is fascinating to me, because even back then there was a lot of fear around China. They were distrusting and paranoid about it compared to America, who we were very aligned with. So it seems to be similar, except now that we've got Xi as president, leader for life, it changes things a lot. So in order to understand China now, you have to look into why they're behaving this way. They had a century of humiliation. They had Hong Kong taken from them, and now they need to show the world that they are strong. And that means not budging when it comes to some of those political prisoners that they're holding that are Australian as well. So it's very complicated, but I do believe that Australian government can press on these issues at the same time as maintaining friendliness. And this is the start of it. So I really hope that the ice is melting, because it's better for the people in both countries, and just having that distrust removed is better for removing xenophobia as well.
I have a question. Neither of you, please judge me. I ask with best of intentions. But is Hong Kong to China a little bit like Ukraine to Russia? Like it's this thing of pride and taking back? Is that the sort of thing that everybody is so frightened about? I know that Hong Kong ended up had this English...
And Taiwan as well,
yeah.
Yeah, I would say more people are comparing the Taiwan situation to the Russian one. I haven't really heard the whole...
No, well, I might have made a mistake. But... That's why I said don't judge me, because I'm thinking on the run after a difficult weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that has happened because they successfully handed it over in terms of Hong Kong. But I think the political experts are saying that you can't compare them because they've had such different histories. They do have full democracy there. Taiwan has their own military as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what I believe through the articles that I've read is that they're not comparable.
Okay, that's interesting. So when we look at the whole China situation, do they have friends with benefits, or is it always a frenemy situation whereby there's an element of fear and mistrust?
Oh, that's a great question.
I thought I should redeem myself.
They do get some benefits, and especially if you look on a more provincial level, like Melbourne has a sister city, Tianjin, as well, and councillors here from Melbourne will go over and make friends with them. So it depends on what level of politics you're talking. So I think there's, especially, you know, our premier has gone over and they try to do their own types of negotiating, and I think it all helps. I recently was in Hong Kong and I had a lunch with the AusCham people, the Australian Chamber of Commerce, and they're talking about Australian wine and lobsters are still blocked, and they talk about it quite lightheartedly because when they do make it into the country, they're confiscating them, and the people in the office are like, "Oh, can we have those back? They're Australian lobsters. They belong to us, so we deserve to enjoy them," basically. So I think having these conversations where even if it seems like a lunch, people seeing eye to eye, I think it's still helping. Whether they even with especially politicians that go over and they just make a media trip out of it, I think it still says a lot about the fact Australia is going there. So it all adds up to the fact that we're improving relations. Mm-hmm.
And is this something that you're seeing, this is a takeaway for you looking at the G20 summit, Annie? Like we are on a good path to working together, Australia and China?
Yeah, it's going to take a long time, I think, for things to improve, because they even, I think talks of the trip started last year and now they haven't set a date yet exactly. It'll be somewhere between 31st of October to 4th of November to mark that 50th anniversary. Yeah. But whether or not they're going to make concrete plans out of that to change, we did see recently, earlier in the year when the leaders met up, they came up with a lot of Australia had a bunch of different agreements that they were going to press forward with, or lines that they were going to use in terms of controlling China's reach. And they kind of tiptoed around it. They didn't specifically say China, but they talked about, controlling powers in the region, and we need to start making friends in the Pacific so that we have more defence in case something does happen. And we're still going ahead with the AUKUS deal, which says Australia's very concerned about China's rapid military build-up, but at the same time trying to be friends. So that probably says to me the most, that we are going ahead with this frenemy approach.
It's all in the language, isn't it, Annie? Well, that's it for now. Adieu, au revoir. But if you like what you heard, can't wait for even more. Why don't you tune into the live show on DAB Plus if you're in Brisbane, Sydney or Melbourne, or just join me online at disrupt.radio. Of course you know my name is Libby. I'm here with the team every morning. Talk soon.
Disrupt Radio. Tune in to opportunity.